Hi Razor community, and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Razor Sharp Show, where we all hang out to stay sharp. We are your hosts, Ray Milodoni and Matt Romania. Matt, can you share why our podcast exists?
Our podcast exists to educate, inspire, and motivate you to help you reach your goals and make a positive impact in the world.
That's right. And we just love making our podcast every week and want to thank you, our listeners, for all the ongoing support you have shown. If this is your first time listening, well, welcome to the Razor community.
So if you want to move the needle forward and get closer to your goals, stick around as you're going to enjoy this.
Inspiration, motivation, and education. Welcome to the Razor Sharp Show, Deep Dive Edition. Stay tuned as we invite action takers onto the show to share their experience and insights on topics critical to your business success. And now, here's your host, Matt Romania.
Hello and welcome to a deep dive edition of the Razor Sharp Show. Appreciate you tuning in. Today's guest is an entrepreneurial social worker who brings together his passion for giving, community, and innovation. He's the founder of the Keri Keri Community Cafes here in Melbourne, Australia. James Murphy, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Matt.
It's really awesome to have you on and talk about all things social enterprise and, you know, just what makes good business and growth and all that good stuff. But to kick things off, what does it mean to be a social enterprise, do you think?
Well, sometimes, man, I'm not really sure, to be honest.
Yeah.
because, look, there's a heap of definitions floating around. And we've been, Keri Keri just had our 10th birthday recently. And when we first started, you know, the word that everyone used to describe what they were doing was community enterprise, which was very focused in the community. And then over time it evolved and has evolved into things like social enterprise or social business or, you know, broader things that we understand a bit better, like cooperatives and those sort of things. But I think, look, I mean, for us personally, we've never been too concerned about how we describe ourselves. And I think, you know, we wouldn't and have not sort of described ourselves necessarily as a social enterprise. I mean, that's not to say that there's anything that we may or may not, but I suppose we're less interested in the definition itself and sort of really sort of focused on what we're doing. So we sort of say that what we do is celebrate community, or that we're a community focused cafe, or that we have a strong ethos, a strong community ethos is sort of the way that we'd describe ourselves. But, you know, in terms of for the people out there, traditionally, I suppose social enterprise is really around a business that trades for a social purpose. And then the definitions vary in terms of what that social purpose is, and therefore how you're sort of meeting your social objectives. So that might be through redistribution, you know, of profit or those sort of things, or there might be an employment focus as part of what you're doing. But it's really around having that social purpose as a core part of what you're doing things for. And for us, over time, we've had different focuses at various points in our business cycle. So therefore, for us, it's sort of more focused on less about the definition and more about the work itself and working out how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And introduce us to Keri Keri. What is it and why does it exist?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, for us, I was lucky enough to grow up in Fiji as a kid and really sort of experience that rich culture of, you know, anyone that's been to Fiji understands how friendly the Fijian people are. You know, so when it came to starting a business, you know, I really sort of, you know, part of what Keri Keri is about is sort of replicating and sort of capturing a bit of that sharing and caring notion of sort of the culture that I grew up in. So Keri Keri is itself a Fijian custom in which a relative or neighbour can request something and it must be willingly given with no expectation of repayment. So that custom really inspires everything we do. So we're quite generous in orientation. We're sort of quite focused on, you know, what that broader community looks like. And we're also quite focused on how we can facilitate an environment in which people feel comfortable helping. So that's the sort of broad sort of focus. You know, on a day-to-day level, you know, we've had different models over time. And actually, we're just in the process of changing our model at the moment. We've traditionally had a more sort of donation focus as part of our day-to-day sort of giving program, you know. But really, to capture it for people out there is that every time you order a coffee or make a purchase, you're given a playing card, which acts as your vote. And with that, you then help vote. In the case in which we've recently changed, you sort of we're talking about changing this week. what we do now is we actually allocate $5,000 for the year, and people are choosing whether they'd like to support health events, cultural events, social events, or environmental events. And what we're doing is we're using that $5,000 to actually launch, celebrate, develop, you know, and do a whole lot of community events within our local community. So that's really our sort of focus, is really around the community events now, where traditionally for the last 10 years we've donated a certain amount each month, and that people have chosen where that goes. And then in our early days, we actually donated our profits, you know, in the first sort of 4 to 5 years. So there's been different iterations over time, and I think the one thing we're focused on is continuing to have a dialogue with our community in terms of what works, and sort of making sure that we're continually innovating and testing and piloting different ways of engaging and celebrating the community in which we operate. Yeah.
Mm, and obviously that keeping community in mind has been something from the start by the sounds. And can you take us back in time when you first had the idea for Kerry Kerry, and what actions did you take to turn your idea into reality?
Absolutely. And I think recently sort of celebrating our 10 years really sort of took me back to sort of the start. And I think, you know, for us, I mean, I'm a social worker, as you mentioned, by background. So I'd been working in family services and child protection and those sort of areas. And for me, the idea when Kerry Kerry first started was really around, you know, providing employment opportunities for some people that, you know, wouldn't be employed otherwise, or they might have particular barriers to finding work. So my sort of inspiration, you know, back then was really around providing an employment and training model for them. So I had $1,500 that I'd saved up, and we rented absolutely everything because I wasn't sure whether it was going to work. So I was sort of, you know, so I needed to be sure that, yeah, we didn't have too much at risk. And then we just sort of got started. So we got a trial. Our first coffee shop was a small coffee cart at the University of Melbourne. And, yeah, we trained 8 young people in our first year of operation, and really just, you know, that was the entire sort of focus of what we were doing. And really the trading, which was the coffee shop, really sort of, you know, operated to support the training and employment that we were providing. And then anything left over, being, you know, the profits in that case, was distributed according to how people chose. And back then, the options was the owner, being me, or you could support charities just in a broad sense, or the environment, you know. So it was really, you know, there wasn't much money when we first started, you know, like all businesses, but it was really more about having a conversation about those different elements in the community and what it means as a business to operate in a community. So really, you know, looking back, I mean, I was a social worker, very young and very idealistic, you know. So it was sort of a real utopian sort of vision. And I think, you know, because we didn't have much at risk, we could do that. And I think over time we sort of evolved, in response to, you know, taking on more risk, both financially and from a business side, and also me personally growing up and finding, you know, what's the most, I think with all social enterprise or social purpose businesses or community-focused initiatives, it's really about finding the reasons why you're doing it, and really sort of understanding that. And so therefore you sort of, once you've understand your own personality and what, why it is that you're doing things, and that's really important because that's really why people support you and, you know, customers are keen to, really be involved in what you're doing because, yeah, they understand the passion and that maybe it's not quite perfect to start with, but they're sort of on the journey with you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And on that journey, whether it's been at the start or, you know, more recently, what have you found to be like the main challenges when running a, you know, social purpose-focused business?
Well, I think, you know, look, it's really tough, to be honest. You know, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, it's, you know, any tougher than a normal, you know, in terms of all business is tough in terms of just being able to balance the different goals and agendas you have. But I think, you know, probably I underestimated, you know, things in the early stages in terms of, you know, balancing goals at once and then also having this sort of social purpose, you know, as part of what you're doing. So I think, but I think the hardest part is, you know, to be honest, is I've always funded things out of my own back pocket, you know. You know, so we had the $1,500 to start with. I then was in a position I borrowed $10,000 from my family. You know, my dad charged me 13.5% interest.
Love it.
You know, for that $10,000. You know, like it was really, you know, like they've always sort of made sure I've had the, you know, I like to say my feet close to the fire. You know, so even though you might have these objectives, it's really important that you're meeting the business fundamentals along the way. So, you know, $10,000, and then I borrowed $80,000 from my granddad. I was able to refinance and get an 8% interest rate, which was much better. And then from there, it's been very much sort of negotiating with the bank different things. And I think probably that's the hardest, to be honest, you know, is that, you know, it's great you sort of have a particular focus on the community or, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do. But in the end, yeah, you know, when you're a sort of a structure like mine, you really need to be making sure you're continuing to, you know, sort of balance that as objectives of growing the business, but then also making sure you've got the business fundamentals right. And I think the biggest lesson probably over my time is knowing that the business needs to lead the social, you know. And what I mean by that is that, you know, is that it's all well and good to have whatever social objective you have, but if the business fundamentals aren't right, well, it really is just going to fall over. So there's, you know, it's about giving yourself permission to get the business model right first and foremost, and then sort of having the social sort of, you know, almost like, you know, sort of be dragged along as part of that business prospering. So I know that sort of, it's sort of a bit to get your head around, because a lot of people, you know, lead with the social in the sense of that's the purpose and that's why people are engaged and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, like you in my case, you're still talking about a cup of coffee, and that cup of coffee needs to be, you know, the simple, very practical things of, is the location right? What's the price? Is it convenient? How quick was it? How did it taste? You know, all those fundamentals, you know, they're absolutely paramount before anything extra that you do, you know. So that's sort of, that's the key learning over the time.
Yeah, love that tip to really focus on your business model as well, because with social purpose, you'll build that crowd, but, you know, if you don't have the fundamentals right, then, you know, you might be on shaky ground later down the track. And for someone who is in the process of just starting up a social enterprise, they're finally moving from idea to action, do you have any like resources or things to watch out for, recommended coffee intake, anything that, you know, is required for those first really few weeks of creating something real?
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, maybe I'd sort of say, don't do it. Stop, you know.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. Don't go down the hole. No, but I think the hardest part, and I think, you know, watching other people, is that, you know, we're all trying to get it perfect to start with, or we're sort of trying to, you know, we're really sort of trying to, you know, when we start, really make it look and sound fantastic and be fantastic. But the hardest part is actually just starting and allowing it to be messy and giving yourself permission to not know exactly how it's going to work. Or you know, I think sometimes, you know, we get locked into a position, you know, we really get locked into the particular social purpose or what we're doing or those sort of things. And that really sort of, you know, doesn't really enable flexibility. And in my case, you know, when I'm very passionate about the community, it doesn't celebrate the process, you know. It doesn't celebrate the actual dialogue and experimentation that you need to do to actually get it right, because the reality is most of this stuff is bigger than – it's all bigger than you, you know. So, well, you're trying to make it bigger than you, you know. And so therefore it's actually about others, you know. And if it's about them, it's about making sure that they're involved in that process. And as part of that, it's going to change over time, you know. So for us, we really try to celebrate the process more than the outcome as much as possible. And I think sort of that's my main thing is just do it and enjoy that. You know, it's really, it takes a little while to do, but, you know, because you want it all to be sorted and you want to be at that level and then you get to that level and you want to be there and it's just this never-ending sort of thing. And I think sometimes, you know, this goes to my new enterprise, you just need to pause and take a breath sometimes.
Yeah, and that's a good teaser and we'll definitely come back to that. And like you mentioned the focus is others and I want to know, particularly in the early days, and we will come back to the present time, but like how did you go about curating that support for, you know, what was a new venture? How did you build that loyal following? And I guess, how do you continue to build it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a challenge in terms of every day. And I think sort of, I think one of my sort of key learnings has been that there's been a couple of times where you feel, you know, when we're all about sort of generosity and giving, where you've sort of, I've started to feel like I needed to protect things a few times, you know. And that's really when you sort of grow to a point where, you know, like at Melbourne University, you know, we had a small coffee cart, then we had two carts, and then we had a kiosk, you know. And we got to a point where we're serving 1,000 customers a day, you know. Like, so, like, from an actual business point of view, I mean, that's, you know, more than one coffee every minute for every minute that you're open, you know. Yeah, like, so that's a serious business, you know. But I think sort of one of my key learnings then is you sort of, that's the time when I was actually like, wow, like, you know, this is the time I need to get out of here, because it's sort of like I was starting to sort of, you know, sort of be less generous, and, you know, you sort of start to become more protective of your space and, you know, like things like that. And so the very thing that had built our business, which was the engagement with the community, and we activated a space and people talked about us as very much the town square sort of feeling, where it's very inclusive and all of those things, you know, we were actually sort of almost, like, the success actually stopped us being able to have that community impact, because we couldn't even say hello, let alone actually like have a dialogue with them in any way. So it actually became a coffee shop in the actual, it literally was just a coffee shop, if that makes sense. You know, like, so yes, we had this donation element as part of the business, and that was great because, you know, we were able to support organizations and that was sort of the impact. But I think for me, it sort of lost the essence of, this is actually the whole focus of this business is about building and strengthening relationships, and that we were no longer able to do that because we didn't have the time to do that. And so that's the key learning for me. There's been a couple of times along the way where you sort of, maybe it's more my personality that I get a bit bored once it's sort of like set, or once I've sort of like I've run out of ideas, or, you know, I've given to that site or that space or that community that I sort of can. And actually it's probably grown beyond me, you know. And I think that's the sort of key learning for me, is making sure with this stuff is that you're always flexible and you're always moving, and that, you know, things are always evolving. And I think when I talk about community, you know, I often use the definition of sort of, you know, people are actually constructing their own version of community, and that our role is to have a dialogue or conscious raising or an exchange or whatever it is, but it's still about them constructing their own version, you know. And I think sometimes that involves you not being there. And you got to get used to that, because it's sort of that's part of the process.
Certain strategies or kind of, I guess, tactics to deal with that acceleration in growth, and because it sounds quite overwhelming, 1,000 coffees in one day, and yeah, you're absolutely right. Once you start, you know, becoming that busy, it's really difficult to come back to that community feel. Like, did you make any conscious decisions to say, look, this is how it's evolving. We really need to implement these things to kind of bring it back to the people?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the reality is, Matt, is that, you know, like, I mean, the youth training and stuff that was such a core focus of that early part of the business, I mean, we could no longer do, you know, because, I mean, you know, particularly, you know, individuals we would say, like, you know, a young person with anxiety or whatever would sort of see that line grow and just feel a sense of being filmed, let alone, you know, so they didn't have the space to be able to actually sort of, it was all about performance under pressure at all times, you know. So it was at that time that we launched what we call Kerikeri South, you know. So we sort of had the kiosks, sort of the carts, two carts, the kiosk at Melbourne Uni, and then we launched a Boyd Community Hub down in South Bank. And that's that was really a conscious decision to sort of provide a space that was more, well, it provided, you know, an opportunity for us to have the time to train and really sort of have that opportunity to build relationships and learn how to do that. And how do you be part of the community? And, you know, because when you're at Melbourne University, it's there's an existing community and it's very strong. And so then we moved into a place. And when we moved into South Bank in 2012, I mean, we were behind Crown and there's nothing there, you know, like, you know, like now, I mean, we've got so many towers, you know, in terms of being built, in terms of people living there. But when we first got there, there was no one, you know. So, you know, you talk about the difference. I mean, we go from serving 1,000 customers a day to, I remember, you know, like in our first couple of weeks, maybe serving 50 in the whole time. You know? And, you know, that was a shock. And that was sort of, but it was exciting, you know, and you sort of learn, you know, for us, it really learned how to be part of the, you know, be part of the community and engage with them and activate that, you know. So we were part of the first community hub in the city of Melbourne. So in our building was a library, so the South Bank Library, maternal child health nurses, play groups, there was artists in residence upstairs. So it had all the ingredients, but what we needed to learn how to do was to animate it and actually how to bring it to life, you know. So that's where we learned a lot about how to engage with the community, and that's where this sort of whole focus of community events has come from. Because, yeah, we started events like one year we did the Ham Cup, and, you know, there's a basketball ring out the back, and, you know, if you got the basketball in from halfway, you actually won a ham, you know, like, and, you know, we sort of launched these things, but not knowing how they'd go, but they were hugely popular, you know. So, you know, small things that we started to do like that, you know, like the food trucks were growing in popularity back then, and we used to get them down on Fridays and call it Fat Fridays, and, you know, like, just these sort of things that people don't expect, you know. It was a really rich and wonderful time to sort of trial those different things, and over time that's sort of you know, that's really grown to be sort of a core part of our business. I mean, you know, Kerikeri Day is our birthday, and we give away free coffee all day, and that's sort of a wonderful initiative about, you know, that notion of giving. But then, you know, some of the more popular things this year have actually been, I mean, we had a dog disco, which was out of control in terms of popularity, because, I mean, you can't, this is in our newest site in the Fitzroy Gardens, is you can't blast out any music in the park. So we had this special playlist for the dogs that would just fit their level. And then all the owners had silent disco, you know, so they all had headphones on. But those sort of things, you know, those sort of things are really sort of, they're really connect with people and provide an opportunity to just experience that notion of community that we're so proud of, or that we are, I suppose, you know, helping facilitate, or, you know, part of that. And I think, you know, they're the things, like, I mean, in a couple of weeks on Mother's Day, we're doing story time in the park with the East Melbourne Library, and those opportunities are real. So they're moments or rituals that really celebrate, I suppose, what we're all about.
Yeah, and they're memorable as well. And so it's kind of keeping the fun element in the community, you know, piques people's interest. And, you know, coming from a marketer, it's also great for brand awareness. And I just love the level of creativity. And I'm going to go a little bit off topic, and we'll come back to social enterprise and all the rest of it. But would you mind just explaining one of the things you did? Because when you told me about it, when we met for coffee, I was just amazed, and I think I've told everyone anyway. But would you mind explaining what reverse busking is?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're actually just about to do that again. Well, you know, this has happened to me again recently, is that I was sitting in traffic, and I think we've probably all experienced this, and, you know, it's becoming more popular. This juggler sort of jumped out in front of the car and started juggling, and I just, you know, I was just like amazed, you know. And then he sort of came, and, you know, after the performance, you're at the traffic lights and they give you, you know, they ask for a bit of money, you know, and I immediately said, mate, give me a call, I've got an idea for you, you know. So they came to the cafe and I said, look, I've got this idea where, once again, you sort of got to get around these sort of different limitations. You know, you're not allowed to advertise in the park, you know. So I was like, how am I going to let people know? This is when you sort of, when you open a greenfield site, you got to let people know you exist, you know. So how are we actually going to let them know? So we managed to sort of put this guy up on the corner, and everyone sort of piles off the train, and then they have to wait on the other side of the traffic lights, you know, to come over. And so I thought, let's put this guy here, who's a wonderful, you know, juggler, and, you know, he's performing away. And then as people cross the traffic lights, they have to walk past him. And I sort of thought the same thing. He sort of pulls off his hat as if to sort of collect money, and, you know, we all expect to sort of put some money in as part of the performance. But instead of that, I wanted it to be a gift. And so I had a whole lot of free coffee vouchers in the hat. And so as I try to give money, he's like, no, this is, you know, this has already been paid for. This is a gift of, you know, Kerry Green. And you actually then take a free coffee voucher from that. I mean, and that's been one of our best ways, because what it does is really those people that engage and actually reach to get, you know, to give money, or, you know, those people are our type of customers.
Yeah.
So
yep,
that was
sure.
Fluke. That was absolutely fluke by chance, you know, but it really sort of, you know, our sort of group of people are those people that are looking for something just a little bit different, or are willing to explore something that's not quite right, or, you know, willing
exactly.
to invest. And so, you know, that's been a great way to sort of do it. And we're just about to do it again, because I found another great juggler. He visited the other day. And we're going to do that when we do story time in the park also. It's just sort of, you know, for the kids, and, it'll be a bit of fun. So, yeah, but lots of those things. And I think, look, as I said, we've just changed this week in terms of away from a donation system to specific causes, and now looking at supporting our own sort of community events. But as part of launching that, I'm really keen to offer sort of, you know, maybe 5 or 10, we'll need to work it through with the team, but we want to invite people, you know, from our local community, but also the broader community, to actually come and work with us. And so, you know, I'm going to invite a group of people to come and work with me to launch their own community event, and actually use our community to actually do that. So I'm sort of keen to do that and actually, you know, help people and sort of work together with them on, you know, they might have something that they've always wanted to do, and I suppose we want to actually give them an opportunity to actually launch that with us, you know, too. So it's an opportunity to sort of partner and also sort of have more more engagement, you know, in terms of what we're looking for. So because I think I'm not sure whether I mentioned to you this last time, but I think people have got a bit of cause fatigue, I'm calling it, you know, which is sort of, you know, when we first started donating money, you know, really it was sort of quite, you know, unknown, you know, and also people donating their profits has sort of become a sort of thing too. And I think, you know, for us, that's never sort of sit so well, because it's sort of got a natural, the impact comes from making profit, you know, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, making profit. But once we sort of start to maximize profit, you know, a lot of our stuff that we used, we realized our impact was also making sure that our coffee wasn't that expensive, you know, and that was the gift that we were giving our community, you know. So I suppose a lot of the stuff I'm passionate about is building the impact into the model, you know, where just by the model doing more, that the impact happens by the actual activity, which is, I suppose, my latest initiative, rather than, you know, we sort of have this business that makes profit, and then with that profit, we're then using that for our impact. So for us, you know, there's all different types of models, but we want as much as our stuff to be in the actual, you know, sort of in the process of doing things in the first place. And that goes back to, you know, when we first started, you know, and people would remember this, it was all about fair trade coffee. And so it was the very act of, you know, actually selling more fair trade coffee that was the actual social impact. So, yeah, there's so many different models and different ways to do things. And I think, you know, there's no right or wrong is the message that I'd sort of give out there. And I think it's really about, you know, just making sure that you're open and transparent in it, you know, and really having that dialogue with your community. And look, if it's not working, I mean, they'll let you know about it, you know, so, yeah. Mm.
And, yeah, that's exactly right. And it's that whole, like, collaboration with your community instead of just coming up with something and say, here it is. If you've got that transparency, well, you're also getting regular input and, you know, evolving to better match the community. So, I really like that. And you did mention the I word in there, impact. So I do want to, I mean, because you've been doing this for, it's been over 10 years.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do want to ask you, what about someone who has been running, you know, a social enterprise for a while and they don't really feel like they're making an impact to the community they're in? Like, what would be your advice to them based on your experience? Are there any strategies for evaluating impact and then knowing what to do next?
I suppose my biggest thing is to sort of have a conversation with the community in which you're trying to have impact. You know, like, I mean, about sort of starting with that, you know. Mm. And I think that's sort of the biggest thing. And that's sort of, I suppose, to give you the example of our most recent change, is that was led by my staff. You know, we had a development session the other day, you know, in which they sort of said, you know, we're not sure the cause stuff is sort of being communicated and, you know, being supported in the way that it has been in the past, you know. And I said, well, let's do something differently about that, you know. And they're now really excited about this new model because it's sort of like it's something that they can touch and feel and,
yeah,
you know, where sort of before, I mean, what was, you know, sort of working for us so well for so long. I mean, it just shows that we've changed a number of times. And I think, you know, I think it goes back to the earlier point of sort of making sure that you're very sort of flexible and, you know, wanting to sort of have that innovation as you go, you know. But I mean, in terms of impact, I mean, I'm just a very big fan of being upfront about it, you know. And that, I mean, when we, with the donations, I often say, you know, there'll be someone that donates more than us and someone that donates less than us. But it's not really, for us, that's not really the point. And for us, the notion of Kerry is really around, I mean, if you read any of our reviews or, you know, talk to any of our customers that come regularly, I mean, the one thing that defines us is really the friendliness of our staff, you know, and that's where that notion of caring is really articulated, you know. You know, if we were gone, you know, if we weren't there, you know, people would miss us, you know, and that's that, it's the visceral feeling of that, you know, which is what we're working towards, you know. So, but having said that, you know, those touch points are also embedded in everything of the model, you know. And I think, you know, I had an interesting conversation with one of the not-for-profits recently, you know, and I sort of said, I've worked 10 years to have the privilege to run my model this way, you know, like it's a privilege, you know, that we sort of don't want to be super busy. I've already had a super busy cafe, you know, like that, you know, that we put limitations on it and that there's an element of scarcity to it. And, you know, these are all things that you learn over time. And I think as I sort of said earlier, is that there's no right or wrong way, but it's about just feeling your way through it. And I think it's about making sure that you're connected with those feelings. And I think once you give yourself permission to start thinking about or using the lens of feelings, you really start to, yeah, think about things differently, you know, than, you know, a straight impact measurement or, you know, like, or an actual profitability or whatever it is. I mean, we live in a society that's all about, you know, quantifying and numbers and, you know, it's all about, you know, the actual metrics, you know. And I think, you know, sometimes is the great thing about feelings and actually sort of thinking about the one thing we all remember is how something made us feel or how we were cared for, is once you start to do that, you know, you actually just uncover that stuff through a conversation, you know. And I think it shows our most recent thing is done through a conversation. And, you know, our next step is to have a community conversation and actually invite our community to sort of, you know, we're seeking permission from our community to sort of do the next step. And I think that's the thing, is that impact alongside permission, you know, is to sort of say, well, you know, is the impact that we're actually making actually something people want?
Ooh, I like that. That's a good one.
You know, like, if we actually ask them that's what they want, or, you know, like, and so, and once again, there's no right or wrong way. It's just about, you know, actually, you know, thinking about those things, you know, and actually just asking the questions. And I think that's where slowing down a bit and actually sort of really taking the time is really important. Yeah.
Mm, oh, I love that. And so, before we finish today's episode, you kind of teased at it before. I really wanted to ask you about your new initiative, Future Coffee. And can you share the story of Future Coffee and, you know, and how listeners can get involved and where it's going to take you the next, you know, year or, you know, whatever you want to talk about it. I'm listening. I'm a big coffee fan, so I'm all ears.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think, you know, it goes a little bit to impact, you know, is that, you know, after 10 years, I just realized, wow, I'm not sure I can do another coffee shop. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of, it requires a lot of effort and you love that. And, but at the same time, it was like, for what we're trying to do, it requires a lot of time and effort, you know, to build relationships. And I think the limitation on our model is that it's very difficult to scale, you know, because it's got a, because it works because of its human scale, if that makes sense, you know. So the human scale is actually the richness of what it is, because only people can elicit those feelings and develop that care and build relationships. So when we sort of looked through that lens, we sort of thought, you know, okay, you know, that's full on and that's really hard thing to do. Like, you know, how do we actually do something, or how do we put a little bit of Keri-Keri into, you know, other places, you know? And that's where, you know, I've done a lot of sort of, you know, sort of looking at where the next steps are over the last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done two things. And one, you know, is that I've built a sort of theoretical framework called Oswald & Co., which is where all my sort of thinking comes from. And that's really sort of, we sort of develop, you know, business concepts that celebrate community. Mm-hmm. And I suppose Keri-Keri has always been, you know, the business concepts of that. But our most recent one is Future Coffee. And that really, you know, so in simple terms, what's Future Coffee? Well, it's a plunger coffee to share in the workplace. So it's quite simple in orientation, is that what we're encouraging people to do is, you know, actually, you know, pause their day, make a coffee together, and then simply have a chat. You know, and I think, so really, when we sort of thought about what we're wanting to do, is that, you know, it was really around, you know, well, if I sort of take you back a little bit, you know, for the, yeah, the first ages, you know, in Keri-Keri, I always thought it was about giving, you know, and it was about giving and being generous. And I think what I've learned in the 10 years of Keri-Keri is that we are so generous, and people are out there and are wonderful in terms of wanting to support things and everything like that. But, you know, I realized with Keri-Keri, it is a custom of giving, but the most important part of Keri-Keri is that it's actually a request for help. You know, so it's a relative or neighbor can request something and it must be willingly given. And I thought about our own stuff is that we actually have stopped getting good at asking, you know, so we've stopped asking for help, you know. And so really, I suppose that's what my next 10 years are about, is actually about what stops us from asking and how do we encourage people to ask each other for help more. Because what I've learned is it's in that asking for help in which the connection forms. It's actually by working together. And I suppose that's what Future Coffee is. That's the real theoretical big picture part of it. You know, and in a real practical way, we wanted to say, okay, like, you know, we know people come out to the cafe every day and get their cafe quality coffee, and they're always going to do that, and they're going to continue to do that. But this is the second coffee of the day, or this is the coffee at the start of a meeting, or this is when you have a guest in and you want to sort of make them a coffee. So we've tried to make it as easy as possible. So it's, you know, we're really promoting the plunger as an accessible way. Everyone can make a plunger. There's a video on our website. It's quite easy to do. And you can even buy our coffee already ground for plunger. So it's sort of easy in that way. And then I suppose, you know, where it sort of all ties together is that we also give all our sort of subscribers and people that buy the coffee and, you know, anybody can log onto the website and have a look, but a whole lot of what we're calling sort of future coffee ideas. And they're, you know, really a range of ideas that support this ritual of sharing a coffee together. And really what we're doing is we're just inviting people to get involved and use any of these ideas to encourage, I suppose, you know, coffee conversations in their workplace. So, you know, to start with, we've got Cake Sharing Day up there, which is, you know, you can download a great little icon or a poster, and really that's about encouraging the baking best of your colleagues, really sort of to get around sort of initiative like that. And then the other one's coordinating your coffee break. And I think this came out of, there's some research over in the US, the Bank of America coordinated the coffee breaks in one of their call centers. And, you know, productivity went through the roof, you know, because I suppose what they learned is that it's actually fantastically productive for people to socialize, you know, away from their workstations, you know. Yep. So really, you know, Future Coffee, I mean, it's brand new. It only got launched last week. You know, so we'll sort of see if it works yet. You know, it could be, I feel like I'm back at the start with $1,500, not sure whether it's going to work or not. but that's, I suppose, you know, that's a nice thing to sort of tie it all together is that, you know, I'm a strong believer that the change happens on the edges, you know, and that it's really important to sort of push the boundaries and try new things, and not only for yourself, but, you know, also for the community in which you're trying to operate. And I think this is going to be an interesting initiative. I'm confident that there's a group of people out there that want to become a Future Coffee workplace and really sort of share more coffee and more coffee conversations in the workplace. But, you know, it'll be one of those things. I mean, I've already changed it, you know, the focus, the look and feel of it in the last, you know, week, you know, so... Who knows where we'll be in 2 months.
But yeah, exactly. Sort of, it's all about the constant innovation. And obviously, now that it's launched, you'll be getting that community feedback as well. So, and I'll put a link in the show notes to Future Coffee. So, Razor community, if you're interested in learning more or ordering your own, definitely check out the link. I feel the need to go get a coffee now. So, on that note, James Murphy, thank you for being on the Razor Sharp Show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's really lovely to... you know, speak a little bit more about this. And please, anybody out there, please say hello when you're in the cafe. I'd love to sort of hear more about your own stories.
Wonderful. Until next time, stay sharp.